This podcast is powered by Shockingly Different Leadership, the go-to firm companies trust when needing to up-level their leadership development, improve their HR operations, realign their workforce infrastructures, and increase their capacity to handle business-critical people initiatives. Check out our world-class experts at shockinglydifferent.com and see why SDL should be your number one ally to help your HR, learning, and talent functions become future-ready today.
It's that you have to be certain of the employee, the worker classification. Misclassification is a monumental issue. Does it fly under the radar? Frequently. But if you get caught, it is a serious financial strain for businesses and can be terminal for really small businesses if they are found to be in violation multiple times over.
Blended workforces are one of the hottest talent strategies today, where employers are using a mix of traditional employees with external resources like independent contractors, coaches, consultants, vendors, and technology solutions, all in order to enhance competitiveness, ensure cost flexibility, and expedite business goals. But how are the successful companies infusing blended workforces into their business strategy? And what are the critical success factors and pitfalls to avoid during implementation? And on the flip side, what does it really take for suppliers to improve their chances of finding and landing contract opportunities? The devil is in the details, my friends. I'm your host, Karen Farrell Rhodes, and it's time to get smarter about blended workforces at work.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. We are so thrilled to have on today's show Brian Driscoll, who's the founder of Brian J. Driscoll JD LLC, which is a firm that specializes in providing businesses with innovative HR solutions and compelling legal content. Yes, you heard that correctly. HR and legal. Brian is a lawyer by education who jumped into the world of HR consulting. But what really sets Brian apart is his unique ability to combine HR expertise with legal insight. And being able to advise companies on both the guardrails in the workplace, as well as the guardrails to help reduce legal liability, makes him one heck of a dynamo and a force to be reckoned with. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you, Karen. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's so wonderful to have you. I was mentioning in our pre-talk, I think we could do about 4 or 5 hours, just you and I together. So I'm going to already try to claim time in for part two, but we're really going to enjoy chatting with you today for this part one. And before we get started, I wanted to congratulate you for being over 11 years in business. That's one heck of an achievement.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It has been it's been a bumpy road at times, but mostly a fun, enjoyable endeavor.
Oh, fantastic. Well, before we dive in deep, for as much as you feel comfortable, would you mind giving us just a sneak peek into your personal life or in our hobbies?
Sure. So my wife and I are fairly nomadic. We are based in Orlando, but we spend a good portion of the year and have for the past couple of years traveling around the country, landing in different places. We have a camper van and we spend some time in that getting from destination to destination, just exploring different places around the country, seeing people that we know in different areas and enjoying the food. That's sort of a big draw everywhere we go is what restaurants can we try?
Oh, okay. So I need to have you on speed dial when I'm traveling, when I need a good suggestion to see if you visited that place.
For sure. Yes.
I love that. Well, why don't we start, Brian, with you sharing with the audience a little bit more about what your firm actually does and how that you best serve your clients.
Sure. So I got started sort of in the HR space almost 20 years ago now. I was working for a small law firm in Central Florida, and the owner was partially retired and would leave for months on end to go travel. That presented an opportunity for me to raise my hand and say, you know what, I'll run the shop while you're gone. And that then sort of transitioned me into feeling like I liked business operations and HR a little bit better than actually practicing law. There's certainly a ton of overlap between those two spaces. But yeah. That is sort of how it all started for me. Then I moved to working for a national staffing agency, leading their HR team. And that's where I really honed my skills across state lines. We placed candidates in all 50 states. That's where I really, frankly, became a bit of an HR nerd, where I really started to get into the weeds on some of the laws, some of the nuances, what you can and can't do. And specifically over the last few years, but a little more broadly over the last decade or two, how HR has evolved. It used to be very much an HR, very much a business asset protection sort of department. There wasn't really much human in HR departments back in the day. And that's changing a lot. It is much more employee focused. And that's what I try and bring to the table with all of my clients is an employee-centric workplace that starts with compliance without question, because a lot of employees want structure and employees today know more about the law than what they used to. That's where I come in. I help with the compliance and with the employee engagement, the employee satisfaction, and ultimately the productivity of the business that helps them either maintain or grow whatever their specific goals are.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know in your experience and practice, you've seen kinds of workforces, infrastructures, or, you know, how people do business. I'm just curious, do you run as a solopreneur or do you have a small team that you work with?
I do. It's just me. I have some vendors that I work with. I try and stay in my lane. I'm an expert at a couple of things. You know, for example, accounting and stuff like that. That's something that I outsource. While I certainly am capable of doing that, have done that in previous roles, running the books and things. It's just, I prefer to stay in my lane and do what I'm really good at.
That's me too. I mean, our firm, that's what we do. We work with a ton of vendors and suppliers as well. But my thing is strategy, helping organizations decide how to implement their people initiatives. And I'm like you, I stay in my lane and I let my whole team do what they're gifted in. And we try to pull it all together, you know, to build high performing teams, even within SDL. But yeah, I get it. Staying in your lane feels good. Those are things I would do almost for free, you know, when I'm in my zone and when I'm in my space. So I totally get that. Now, I'm curious, Brian, I know the topic of our podcast is, you know, all about blended workforces, which is for our new audience members. It's about a blend of multiple aspects of what the way to get work done, either through traditional employees, vendors, suppliers, or even technology. And so I have even found over the, especially the last 5 years, an acceleration of the mix of how businesses get work done has really been critical to their long-term success. And so I'm just curious your thoughts on some of the challenges and opportunities of blended workforces.
Yeah, they're definitely exactly like you said. There are lots of challenges, but there are also lots of opportunities. I think the biggest challenge that I would want to make clear to anybody, whether it's somebody listening here today or to any client that I engage with, it's that you have to be certain of the employee, the worker classification. Misclassification is a monumental issue. Does it fly under the radar? Frequently. But if you get caught, it is a serious financial strain for businesses and can be terminal for really small businesses if they are found to be in violation multiple times over. Because each employee, each misclassified worker is its own fine. Plus, employees can sue. So that is the biggest challenge. And that is one of the areas where, especially over the last couple of years, where we've seen a lot of companies, like you said, sort of blend workforces between part-time and full-time employees, as well as independent contractors and other vendors to help them run their business. That's all great, but making sure that they're classified correctly and that you're working within those classifications correctly, because you can classify somebody as an independent contractor, but if you tell them they've got to work 8 to 5, 40 hours a week, they're not an independent contractor. So that is the biggest challenge. And that is, if there is one takeaway from our conversation today, that is the thing to be aware of. That is the thing to make sure that you're getting right and to speak with somebody, especially as recently, some of that whole process, the tests for that have changed. It used to be that factors were weighted differently. Now it's sort of a, a holistic approach, a totality of the circumstances. So that is definitely something to be aware of. From the positive side, there's definitely positives because it can help you fill gaps easier, with especially with independent contractors. If you have a need for a specific project, or you need a subject matter expert for something, using accounting as an example, say you need to have your books audited because it's been a few years since you've done that. You just want to make sure everything's on the up and up. You don't need to hire an employee for that. You can hire an accountant freelancer, a solopreneur, or an accounting business, an auditor, to come in and do that for you. And that's totally acceptable and that's totally fine. It can help supplement that as opposed to having to hire an internal employee. So there are definitely more things that we can go into, but I think those are sort of the biggest in each of those categories for the pros and cons.
I so agree with you. And I'm going to do like a virtual high five on that, because that's what I, when I speak on blended workforces and blended workforce strategies, that is a very key component that we go deep in, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there. And to your point, yes, some people are getting away with things, you know, but it's when you get caught is when you realize how much hot water you're in. And I'll add to that not only do companies and leaders and companies need to be aware, but they also need to train their managers on how to interact with those in the extended workforce as well, because, you know, there's a limit of work direction, as you know, legal and things like that. And that these are some things that honestly weren't taught in school growing, you know, when you went to school. It's rare that it's even a course within the learning and development department that they offer. So to your point, if you're going to go down that route, you need to make sure that everyone is getting the information and doing all they can to decrease the legal risk of the company. Use, you know, vendors, contractors, and suppliers right, correct?
Exactly. And that's one of the services I offer for specifically the reason that you stated, is that it's often something that's overlooked from a management perspective. Sure, a business owner may know, and as they grow, they're going to hire people managers. But those people managers, it's not a requirement anywhere in America for that type of training. And frankly, I think it should be. But that is one of the services that I offer, to provide that training to managers and literally giving them a checklist to say, you know, this is an employee, this is a contractor in most cases, and helping them work through that process from the job description and interview phase all the way through to the employee's tenure, the worker's tenure with the business, to make sure that they're not only starting compliant, but they're staying compliant.
Correct. That's true. Now, you may or may not have a perspective on this, but I'm going to ask anyway. I know because we're in these days, there's companies have such distributed workforces and teams, and there's a double down on trying to solidify employee cultures, and extended workforces are part of the cultures because they're a part of how to get work done. Do you have any thoughts or perspectives on how you can safely integrate suppliers onto your team without crossing that line of treating them like employees?
Yes. And this is going to sound like a boring or maybe even unsatisfying answer.
No, please.
But the way to do that is to be compliant, is to understand the compliance regulations around what you can and cannot do. It used to be that when you partnered with an independent contractor, you wouldn't provide them, say, a holiday bonus. You wouldn't provide them with time off. You wouldn't provide them access to different benefits that your company offered. You wouldn't even maybe invite them to holiday parties or to company retreats, because that's for employees. That's for workers, true employees of the business. Today, with some exceptions, the line is a little bit more blurred, but that's where, again, the recent change this year on misclassification takes more of a holistic approach. It looks at more of the totality of circumstances. Should you be providing contractors paid time off? No, unless that's a benefit that is required under certain state laws, which we can get into, but is becoming a thing in places like California and Washington.
And Texas and New York.
Yeah, surprisingly, Texas, frankly. So that is there. there's still sort of a line, but the line is a little more hazy than what it used to be. And that's how you how you include the contractors in the whole employment landscape, the whole business culture. You do that by providing them with access to some of the benefits where you're allowed to. You include them in team meetings. They should be optional for independent contractors and they should be paid for their attendance in them. But you include them in those events. You include them in team building events that you hold offsite or go somewhere and do. You include them in the process. You include them as part of the team because they are part of the team. They may not be an employee entitled to all of the benefits that W-2 employees get, but they're still part of the team and they need to be treated that way.
Absolutely. And it's very important sometimes for team cohesiveness, meaning that employees understanding kind of the work they're doing. Sometimes you have to be face to face, you know, elbow to elbow to understand. But in my experience, and I don't know why you would be wrong because you're a lawyer, but that's spot on and how, you know, we advise as well, integrating them as well and just making sure that, like you said, it's optional, it's paid, and it shouldn't be optional coming out of your mouth and verbiage, but you having, you know, that grimace, like you better be here kind of thing. It's not a bad, you've got to really make sure, to your point, not to cross those compliance regulations regarding them as well. So I was just curious about your thoughts on that. For you, and I know you don't have a ton, but you have hired a few vendors or suppliers that even help in your business, as you've mentioned. And I'm just curious for you, how you go about sourcing? How did you find those that you wanted to work with? And what did you look like for? What were the differentiators of those that won you over?
It's always a balancing of different needs, wants, and costs. For me, it was when I initially had the thought of, okay, there are some things that I need to outsource. I shouldn't be doing my taxes anymore. I shouldn't be doing monthly reconciliations. That's a few hours that I could better spend helping more clients. So for me, it was what sort of costs are going to be associated with this and what are my needs? What do I need? Do I need somebody to generate and send out invoices? Do I need somebody to do the monthly reconciliations? Do I need to have somebody manage my tax payments and my annual taxes? For me, the answer was a few of those, but not all of those. And so that helps narrow down the search of where am I looking? There may be places that offer a whole suite of packages that includes everything that I need, but it might be too expensive. It might include more than what I need. And that's where I, using that as a specific example, scaled down my options to finally just two and then landed with one that met the needs that I had within my budget that was not giving me more than what I needed, wasn't giving me things that I was paying for but didn't use, but also allowed me to scale, allowed me to grow if I wanted to down the road.
Yeah, very insightful. I'd love to ask that question because, you know, there's a lot of us on the supply side that listen to the podcast and they're always wondering, and people have all these, you know, workshops on how do you capture the attention of your ideal buyer kind of thing. So I'd love to ask the question so that others can gain insights on, you know, what it would take to get their name on the short list. But to your point, one of the key success factors is providing exactly what you as an individual are looking for your company, being that ideal match. Am I correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's not necessarily that I want to see ads from certain vendors or, you know, have vendors follow me around the internet and ping me every once in a while. It's that they just need to have good enough content on their website, good enough SEO to be able to rank so that when I'm searching for certain things, they're going to be one of the first half dozen options or so that I'm going to click on. That to me is the way to get in front of someone like me, to get in front of my eyes and make me want to learn more about the services that you offer and see if there's an alignment. Nothing's going to be a perfect fit. Just like hiring employees, partnering with independent contractors, Same is true with vendors. Nothing is going to be a perfect fit. If I get 80% of what I'm looking for, that is a good goal for me.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I hope you don't mind, but because it's out there in the public domain, but I wanted just to bring up a very intriguing post that you had made. I think it was the last few weeks. It was on LinkedIn, and it was about being approached by companies who admire your work, but then want either free samples or a free pilot or something free before they would indulge into a more in-depth contract engagement. And I know that is a pain that a lot of freelancers or consultants and coaches go through. And so I just would love for you to give voice behind why that is frustrating for those who are on the supply side of the house. You know, what folks should do about it?
I didn't even intend for that to take off like it did. It got a lot of reactions. And it got so many reactions, in fact, that Freelancers Union is an advocacy group for freelancers based out of New York. They actually asked me to write a post about it. So I ended up writing an article for their blog about it as well.
Wow.
It is, it's extremely frustrating. I have to say that it's something that I've gotten used to being in the legal field because, you know, if you know a lawyer, you're always asking them for free advice. You're always picking their brain about something, right? So like, I guess I'm kind of used to it in some ways, but yeah, it's still frustrating because that's not to say that I'm not happy to chat with people. I'm happy to have a 20, 30, 40, even 60 minute conversation with somebody and see if there's alignment, see if their needs are something that I can help with. That's absolutely fine. And throughout that conversation, I'm sure people are going to get some good takeaways about things that they can do, even if they don't retain me. And that's fine.
But they should have you on speed dial every day for a month, right?
I mean, that would be great. Yes. But I think the most frustrating part is that when it goes beyond that and it's asking for more information without retaining me, or like that LinkedIn post and the Freelancers Union article about saying that you found my work online and that you really think I'd be a great fit, now write 3 700-word blogs, unique posts on these topics. We're not going to pay you for it. Like, that's just kind of...
It's not fair. It's not fair.
It's not, because... And frankly, I would feel the same way if I was applying for W-2 jobs. Like, I think that's also something that needs to change. Like, if you're going to require homework for candidates, that needs to be compensated. It doesn't necessarily need to be compensated at a full rate, although I would make the argument that it should. You know, I'm fine to do test rates. I've done that for some writing clients in the past. I've done some, you know, 50% rates or something like that for some short posts. One short post, not, you know, 3 700-word posts. It's about fairness, and it's about compensating people for the work that they do. Like that, because there's to be as blunt as possible, it is wage theft. That's ultimately what it comes down to.
That's right. I know. Now, most of my experience, just to be honest, it's been in the larger company enterprise level space, and so we were always very cautious about that. But as my CHRO, always made our team build into the recruiting costs that any time that was needed for any like sample work, or, you know, maybe it was going through, I don't know, a leadership accelerator assessment type of thing. Or I worked at Microsoft for almost 14 years. And I know you know, the managers always wanted to see people coding and stuff like that. But that's fine, but we need to pay them for the time they're doing that just to see their skill level. So I think you're spot on. I know you're spot on around that. And I just wanted to give voice to that on the podcast, because I wanted to just raise the issue that while in certain circumstances and very limited conditions, it may be okay, it's really, to your point, what wage theft? They just need to factor in some better practices into their people infrastructures if that's what they're going to ask people to do. So,
yeah, and thank you
for giving more voice to that.
Absolutely, and thank you for raising it, because it is an important issue. It's another one of those sort of under the radar, but extremely prevalent issues, both for, as we said, both for contractors and for W-2 employees.
Well, Brian, as you may know, I authored a book on high-performing leaders called Lead at the Top of Your Game. And out of that came numerous tactics based on the research that we did. We'd love to ask our guests, which of the tactics, all are equally important, but which of the tactics really jumped for you? And you were so kind enough to share with us that leading with strategic decision-making really resonated with you. And for my new audience members, leading with strategic decision-making is just what it is, sounds like. It's making good decisions yourself or leading a good decision-making process with teams or others that you're collaborating with. So Brian, Inquiring Minds wants to know, why did this one in particular resonate with you?
I mean, you just used the word. It's collaboration, because leading, a leader is not a boss who tells you what to do. And this, the leading with strategic decision-making sort of encompasses one of the approaches that I try and take with clients, which is more holistic, open, transparent communication. And that is leading a team, leading your business, leading your workers in a certain direction with their input. They are the ones most likely that are getting their hands dirty with the day-to-day work that needs to be done, whatever it is, sales, building widgets, whatever you're doing.
They're doing the heavy lifting, a lot
exactly.
of them.
And they're the ones who know what changes, if any, need to be made to help them be more efficient and productive at their jobs. And that's where, for me, the idea of strategic decision-making comes in. It's a holistic approach that takes into account, yes, the business needs, the business budget, finances are an important component of it, but also the employee needs, not only their personal needs, like what they need from work, what they need from life in general, they need from a balance of those things, but also what they need to help the company grow and succeed.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. Well, if I ask you another question, we're going to be an hour or two in a minute, because I have a ton of questions I want to ask. But since we're close on time, I want to make sure to give Raymond space for, we'll have, of course, all of your bio, your background information in our show notes. And so people can check that out on their favorite podcast platform of choice. But would you please give voice on how people can find you to consult with you maybe about some of your services that you offer?
Sure. So I'm not a huge social media person, but I have recently started doing a little more engagement on LinkedIn and doing some more writing there. So you can certainly find me on LinkedIn. Also my website, brianjdriscoll.com. And those are the two best ways to reach me. My email address is on my website. Shoot me an email. I'll get in touch and we can set up a time to chat and see if there's alignment with what your needs are and what I can offer.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for the gift of your insight and sharing the tips that you have with our listeners on the show today.
Thank you, Karen. I had a great time, and I certainly look forward to part two.
Oh, part two. It's coming, so get ready. And thank you, too, audience, for the gift of your time as well. And I know there are a lot of the podcasts you could be listening to, but we do appreciate you and your time. That's all the time we have for today, unfortunately. But please make sure that you like and share the podcast with others so that we can continuously extend our reach. Hopefully, we will see you again next week. Thank you again and take care.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you again for listening to the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. You can check out the show notes, additional episodes, bonus resources, and also submit guest recommendations on our website at blendedworkforcesatwork.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, or YouTube by searching for the name Karen Rhodes, with Karen being spelled K-A-R-A-N. And if you like the show, the greatest gift you can give would be to subscribe and leave a rating on your favorite podcast platform of choice. This podcast has been a production of Shockingly Different Leadership, a global consultancy which helps organizations execute their people, talent development, and organizational effectiveness initiatives on an on-demand, contract, fractional, or project basis. Huge thanks to the SDL production and editing team for a job well done. Bye for now.